Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
A beautiful morning. So most of you have been here every Sunday, but if you haven't, I've been devoting my talks to the great vows for all. And today I'm going to say a few words on the second great vow. So we covered the great vows for all, just the title itself and what was meant by that, what was intended by that. And then last week we talked about creations are numberless, and we vow to free them. Now, if you recall last week, and there was a quote by Ikkyu, who was a Zen master and poet, and I didn't really capture it exactly from memory, so I'm going to read it again, because I think it's very important when we take up the study of the sutras or we take up the study of precepts. And Ikkyu wrote, "Every day priests minutely examine the law and endlessly chant complicated sutras." And then he admonishes, "Before doing that, though, they should learn how to read the love letters sent by the wind and rain, the snow and moon." Before doing that, though, they should learn how to read the love letters sent by the wind and rain, the snow and moon. It was his intention of writing these words. I think he's saying that it's not enough to understand and recite the sutras, that we must directly experience the spirit expressed by the words that we are chanting. It's like the old saying, he's saying, do not confuse the finger pointing at the moon with the moon itself. Because if we do that, if we fall into that trap, the words are hollow. Now, another thing that occurred to me, you can look at them yourself and see if you see it this way, but the first vow is, creations are numberless, I vow to free them. All right, so that's other directed. And then the next three seem to me to be more self-directed. The second, the third, and the fourth, in the sense that they are prerequisite for accomplishing the first. Basically, we have to clean up our own backyard before we go and mess with somebody else's. And that's because the clearer we are, the more effective we will be in service of others. In order to offer freedom to someone else, we must be free ourselves. So the second vow is, delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Even though delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. Plato said, the worst of deceptions is self-deception. So in saying that delusions are inexhaustible, I think it's another way of saying that they're endless. And some of you may hear this as a very negative statement, but I don't think it is. I think it's an honest, clear, and direct statement of the truth. The natural activity of our mind creates delusion, right? Our minds incessantly create ideas, opinions, projections, discriminations, which we make about each other and the world around us. The catch is that most of us take our opinions, ideas, projections and discrimination as fact, as the truth. And we cling to them. We use them as something to hold on to, something to ground us. The thought of letting go of them brings up disorientation, anxiety, insecurity, fear. So while there are a myriad of delusions that we create for ourselves, I think that there are two fundamental delusions which are the most powerful. Neither one of these is going to come as a big surprise. The first is the notion that things and beings are separate from each other. And it's because of this delusion why people struggle with the Heart Sutra. We read that form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And most people will say, well, how can something be nothing and at the very same time nothing be something? It doesn't make sense. It's crazy. And I think that's because we can't see that the truth expressed by these words are not dualistic. If we are clinging to duality, we can't see it. We say to ourselves and to each other, well, it's got to be one or the other. It can't be both at the same time. You've got to be crazy. But that's delusion created by a mind that processes things dualistically. It's either this or it's that. It's either that or it's this. The other fundamental delusion we cling to is the idea of a separate self. Many people who come to a spiritual practice like Zen are ultimately terrified with the proposition that the practice offers, which is that we must become selfless. Become selfless. Well, if there's no self, who's going to receive the benefits of this practice? And even deeper than that, if there's no self, then who the hell am I? But that's again a delusion. The idea of self and no self are words, they're concepts, it's delusion. The practice calls upon us not through words and ideas, not through reflections. This vow is challenging us to have a different relationship with our minds and a different relationship with the ideas that it creates. I'm going to offer this as a frame of reference. It comes out of a totally different realm. But as you know, I'm a therapist, and in the way that I'm trained to do couples therapy, of course, you'll hear over and over again, I mean, there's movies about it, etc., but that make fun of it. But one of the keys in having a relationship with somebody is communication. You have to be able to communicate. And in a sense, we have to be able to see through the delusions that we create for ourselves about each other. So there's a thing in the way that I was trained called the talking format. And it's got four parts to it. Number one, you state what you observed. Just the facts, just the data. No commentary, nothing added. Just what did you observe? Then the second thing is you say what you made up about that. What did you make up about what you observed in your partner? And then you say, and about that, I felt. You share what you felt about what you saw and what you made up about it. And then the fourth part is, you check out the validity of your observation with your partner. So let me give you an example of how this might work. This is totally made up. Let's say a wife says to her husband, I watched you talking to the neighbor's wife at the party last night, smiling and laughing. So say, what did you make up about that when you saw that? And she says, what I made up about it was that he was flirting and trying to get her into bed with him. And the next requisite is, well, how did that make you feel? And the wife says, I felt humiliated, I felt hurt, and I felt angry. So the fourth part, of course, is check this out with your partner. So in the made-up example, the partner says, well, I wasn't flirting. We both happened to hear an NPR interview with Billy Crystal that morning, which was hysterical, and we were talking about it and laughing. So the point of this example, of course, is not to teach each other how to have conversations with our mates, but to point out that this format takes into account the delusion-producing character of mind and introduces a method for working with it, for checking out if the ideas or the perceptions that we have created are grounded in reality. It's based on the idea that we produce delusions for ourselves. Now, of course, some of you are probably thinking, the husband, yeah, could confess. Yeah, I was flirting. But that's not the point of this. The point of this is that in the terms of communication and understanding each other, this format, which comes from a totally different realm, takes into account the power of delusion, of the power of a deluded mind. And it offers a method in the therapeutic realm for working with this. And in the spiritual realm, and the one that we share here, Zazen is our way of checking out our data, checking out the conclusions we have drawn about ourselves and the world. So this vow is challenging us to become intimate with our delusions and to see how one-sided it is to live in a world created by the mind. American sculptor and creator of mobiles, Alexander Calder, became intimate with steel. From material that seems inert, unable to move, and intractable, and difficult to manage or work with, he created objects that are light and joyful and full of movement. He overcame the delusion, the idea, that he couldn't do certain things with certain materials. So how do we put an end to delusions, especially if they're inexhaustible? How do we wake up to the truth of who we really are? And the answer, which I've mentioned over and over again in talks over the years, is that we must empty ourselves of all our ideas, preconceptions, discriminations, and projections. But this is not just a one-time deal. We must do this moment by moment throughout our entire lives. A few weeks ago, I talked about the koan stepping off the top of the 100-foot pole. As soon as we think we are enlightened, we have become deluded again. We must empty ourselves of that delusion immediately. We must realize we have created a new delusion. Eventually, we get that there is no top of a pole. The process of emptying is a lifetime commitment, as I said. And how do we do this? In this world, we do this by taking up the practice of Zazen and making a commitment to sit to free ourselves of all our delusions. At the same time, my commitment as a teacher is to say that that's not far enough. That's the spiritual side of the fence. But you know that I've talked about the other side of the fence also. We must commit ourselves to heal ourselves of our personal wounds, which hinder not only our practice, but our relationship to each other, and keeps us a prisoner of separation. If we are not spiritually awakened, we create karma that gets in the way of others being free. If we do not free ourselves from the trauma that we carry, from the experiences that we've had in our lives, we carry that delusion as well, which also gets in the way of this commitment to this vow. And we don't just do this work for ourselves, of course, or for our partner, or even for our family. We do it for all beings. That's how great the commitment is. It's not just a local commitment. It's a commitment to the universe. It's that big. And it's not logical, because it's beyond logic. Martin Luther King said at one point, "Freedom at last, freedom at last, thank God Almighty, freedom at last." And that was true only until the next moment when prejudice reveals its ugly head again. There was enormous changes that took place in the civil rights movement. But even today, prejudice exists. The work is never done. If you're going to open this door and enter this path, you have to accept that. There's no big whoop at the end of the path, no vacation where everybody sits around with their feet up, basking in the sun, you know, drinking pina coladas or margaritas. The work is done every day, every moment. But the beauty of it is, if you commit yourself to the practice and you sit deeply enough, the work is not drudgery. It's beauty. It's beautiful to work this way for each other. You want to get up and do it. So to successfully fulfill our commitment to putting an end to our delusions, we must surrender to the fact that delusions are endless, and at the very same time make a deep commitment to put an end to them. And finally, We must do this with an attitude of compassion toward ourselves and an acceptance of our limitations. Each one of us is imperfect, so we do the best we can. Not just for ourselves, not just for our partners, not just for our families, but for everyone, all sentient beings.